Welcome, Sega fans, to the podcast that might be run by a pair of old men shouting at clouds, but at least those clouds are in blue, blue skies. I'm Dan the Mega Driver, and here's the Seaside Street Galaxy to my Emerald Hill. It's James the Sega-holic. Mate, how you doing?
I'm very good, mate. How's yourself?
Yes, yeah, I'm not too bad, mate. It's things have been a bit manic lately in work and home and stuff, but still been finding some time to find to play some games. Old and new, which we'll touch on. But what about yourself, mate? You play anything lately?
Just some Sega Saturn stuff for a video that I'm working on that obviously you know about as we're approaching the 30th PAL anniversary. I have no idea when this pod will go out, if it will go out before or after that. Probably will be before it, won't it? What have we got? It will be before. It's July, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's told you.
See, mate, mean date, see, since I turned 46, my memory's just failing me. It's like, maybe it's a lack of sleep, I don't know, one of the two, but aye, this will be out well before that. Aye, so I'm working on something for the Saturn's 30th in the UK, which has been a bit of fun, as usual, doing a bit of research and coming across some stuff, but just playing the launch titles, you know, to get some footage for that, and trying to get some footage of a Channel 4 film from 1996, which has got Saturn-related content in it.
Yes.
So that's all I'll say on that. More will be revealed in due course. Whenever the video goes out, it will go out on Tuesday, July 8th, 30 years to the day. 30 years, mate. Jesus Christ.
Insane.
But apart from that, not playing anything new. Have been speaking to a mate, Darren, who after the VF5 Revo news this week that's coming to console, obviously it's on PS5, but it's also on Steam. It's now coming to Xbox, and well, it's only on Steam, it's coming to PS5, Xbox Series and Switch 2. Yeah. So he's doing me a wee deal. He's got a spare Series S, he's done a good deal on it for me, so I'll pick that up in due course. So get some online games going, mate, get some footage. Absolutely. For the channel, that'll be fun.
It will be, yeah, because it's interesting that it's officially getting to a PS5 release, because a lot of people kind of up in arms, because as I tried to explain in the Revo review video, and maybe the reveal, one of the two, but the PlayStation 4 release, which was Virtua Fighter Ultimate Showdown, which was also Virtua Fighter Esports in the arcades and in Japan, a game of many names, got a version 2.0 release, so Ultimate Showdown does actually play pretty much exactly like Revo, albeit with PlayStation 4 visuals and no rollback netcode. So PlayStation 5 owners are a little bit miffed, understandably, I think, given that they have to buy a whole new game to get rollback netcode and 4K visuals and stuff. They don't get a free upgrade, they basically have to buy the whole game again. Now the game's reasonably priced, but yeah, it's must sting a little, but honestly, the game's £13. I love it. I love it on Steam.
Well, they took Sega out in the 90s, so you can pay them the money now.
Saving, you know, you saved £100 buying that £2.99 PlayStation, guys. You could.
It's time to cash that check in, fuckers. That's it.
It is. Of course, we did have at the time of recording, the Sega Saturn 30th US anniversary was a couple of days ago, but much appreciation and love to our American friends, but that's not something that we can really discuss at all, because we didn't really live it. You know, celebrated the 30th anniversary of the console, 30th birthday, and we'll do the PAL release, because that's what, well, especially you, mate, as you had a console pretty much on launch day, so
yeah,
looking forward to your celebratory video.
Aye, mate. When do you ever think you see John Major in a Sega Guys video? Nah, I mean, the ultimate tangent.
I was going to start talking about Tory Boy and Mighty Morphin Power Major then, but we don't.
Tory Boy, that was Harry Enfield.
Harry Enfield.
Mighty Morphin Power Major. Was it Tim Nisbett Dim as well?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the Harry Enfield show. Call it. Kevin and Perry. It was Kevin and Perry, the Harry Enfield show, wasn't it?
That was its own show, wasn't it?
I think eventually.
Even Mrs. Patterson. So fair. Superstar DJ Eyeball Paul.
In the movie?
In the movie, yeah. Drinking vodka through his eye. Gets to your brain quicker.
Oh, where are we going with this, mate?
It's yeah, like, where are we going?
If you're still here, thank you for staying with us.
Let's talk about some gaming, mate, but specifically the future of gaming, because we've touched on it before, and I think we've upset a few people in the comments at various times, and I don't think we've held back on anyone, really. You know, we took the mick a bit out of the PS5 Pro and its price when it launched last year, which people call it a scam, and to be honest, it kind of is. I think there's barely any games that support it, and yeah, massively overpriced. You got the Switch 2, and that one's games that are overpriced. You know, people could pay what they want, but it's still an 80 quid for Mario Kart. Doesn't seem right. Xbox have raised all their prices now, which is baffling considering they're all in last place and just can't seem to sell the console for love nor money anyway.
It's just madness, isn't it?
So it's just, you raised this one, mate. It's a nice discussion on why kind of the future is all about the past. The future is about retro gaming, isn't it? Because really, if you're going to be playing a console these days, you might as well play a Sega console, right?
That's it, mate. Never a better time to go back to gaming's past and rediscover the fun times. And I think we were saying about like Xbox. I mean, that was a kind of catalyst for putting this kind of idea out there for a chat, because never before have I seen, or you can correct me if you've seen it before, but as a console is approaching its fifth year on the market, the price is going up. Now, the trend has always been that as something gets older, it gets cheaper to manufacture, it gets smaller, the manufacturing process gets cheaper, and then the console gets cheaper. They may slim it down, they may make modifications to the motherboard, but normally, as a console gets older, as it winds down towards the end of a generation, it gets cheaper. Not anymore. Now, obviously, there's kind of political things at play, especially in terms of like US and China and things like that. You know, tariffs and whatnot for what you see on the news and stuff. Again, I try not to watch the news. Don't like to kind of like to just try and keep positivity in my life, but you kind of help but notice, you know, these sort of like kind of headlines. And so there's reasons why I would think that things, everyday things, would get more expensive. But to see a games console going up in price at this point in its life cycle really did take me aback. It's like just unprecedented. I mean, even if you think about like iPhones, for example, when a new iPhone comes out, the older one gets cheaper, or they make a cheaper version of it. They make the SE version. Like, they bring out the Apple Watch Ultra, they make the SE too, because they make a cheaper model, like the Series S to the Series X, and it tends to stay the same price until the end of its cycle, and then it drops down as it's superseded. But for the Series consoles to be going up, and going up in the numbers that they are, was it like $100?
Yeah, so it turns out that if you get the 2 terabyte Xbox Series X Galaxy with the disc drive, it works out more expensive than the PS5 Pro, which is ludicrous. Now, I know currently Doom Eternal runs better on Series X than PS5 Pro, but Jesus, no one should be paying more for a Series X than a PS5 Pro. Absolutely not. It's absolutely batshit crazy, mate. Now, as you say, we know that there are issues with tariffs and stuff, making the manufacturing, the importing process that much more expensive. But you're right. At this point, I mean, these consoles are 5 years old now. They're 5 years old. Every console, when it's got to its fifth birthday, has seen a fairly dramatic price decrease. You know, if you think back to even as far back as, say, the NES and the Master System 2, you know, that went through a redesign That was like 1992 when that had been in the market in the UK for 5 years. That was $49.99 in Argos with a built-in game and two controllers. You know, you look at the Sega Saturn. It's probably not the best example because they were kind of really cutting that price
No.
to try and stay competitive. The problem is, even though that the Sega Saturn was going right, first out, it launched at 400 quid, went down to 300 when the PlayStation came out, was constantly trying to stay neck and neck. The PlayStation was actually undercutting the place of the Saturn for a long time. And even when the Sega Saturn was like 100 quid, the PlayStation was as well, you know, just a few years into their life cycle. N64 launched, I think that launched for something like 300 quid or something. And that was cut down to 250, 150. In a matter of years. So the fact that these consoles launched at 450 for the premium models, Series S 250, and now 5 years later they're getting these massive price increases, it's beggar's belief, mate. I just can't believe that they don't have the economies of scale to really, you know, hone in on the manufacturing process and make them a little bit more cost effective. Part of me thinks that they're selling, so they're thinking, why reduce the price? You know, PlayStation 5 is tracking only slightly behind the PlayStation 4, and the PlayStation 4 had a price cut at this point. Sony are like, well, you keep buying it, we're going to keep the price as it is, or we're going to raise it. They've already had one price increase this generation.
See.
The other side of it is consoles have been traditionally loss leaders, haven't they? You know, Sega Saturn, even the Sega Saturn, when it launched at $400 or 400 quid, they were losing money at that price because of the cost to manufacture the unit. That doesn't seem to be the case as much now, as far as I understand. Consoles are sold at a profit. The Nintendo consoles definitely are sold at a profit, as far as I understand. But it's like they're not making enough of the games, and that's a problem. But it feels like it shouldn't be the consumer's problem. It shouldn't be my problem that your costs are out of control when you're making your game. You know, I was going into a kind of an, I'll just round it out off the point with this. I was going into a bit of an Elder Scrolls kind of, Oblivion's just come out, the remake. I was looking at kind of Morrowind, Daggerfall, Arena, you know, and it was like, this game was a huge success, selling 150,000 copies. Games sell 2 million copies these days and they're called failures. It's like the industry has changed and games have to sell insurmountable amounts to actually break even, and there's just something fundamentally wrong with it all, I think, mate.
Aye, and I know for a fact that, as you were saying about the Master System 2 being $49.99, there's someone out there with their inflation calculator on their phone putting how much is $49.99 in today's money, and I'm like, see, that boils my piss, man, because like the way I look at it, people went out and worked and got their wages. When they wanted something, you had to hand over 50 quid to get it. And it's the same with you need to hand over 50 quid to get it. It's like I don't buy this whole try to justify prices of things by applying inflation and making, well, it's actually $49.99 and today's money is worth that. It's like, no, but like, everything's got more expensive, but it's like when you got your pay packet and something came out, everything else was in scale to that. It's not as if like the price of like a Mars bar and a can Iron Brew was back then what it is today. So you can't chop and change like the price that you paid for things. Yes, it was cheaper back in the day, but what you were paid in relation to what you were paid today, cost of living and all that, you still had to go in and take the percentage of your salary that you got went. So if you had to pay £400 for a Saturn from your salary back then, it was still the same percentage of your salary that paying 450 quid for a Series X is from that particular salary you have today. It's like I just look at it as an what you deduct from your wages as a percentage. It's not like you can't sit there and just try and justify this by, you know, applying inflation. You know, it's like it's one of these arguments you see online, it's becoming more and more prevalent. It's like, and there's no justification. This is going to sound like old men ranting at the cloud here,
That's
or
why I opened with what I said.
you know what I mean? But it's like what you said there, mate, about the sales numbers as well. A game sells 2 million units and it's deemed a failure. And I was looking as well, this generation in particular, by and large, has been shite primarily because there's not that many new games. It started out, the first, I would say, what, 3 years, easy, was pretty much remasters and patches to make the games run on console the way they ran on PC. Right, so that's what it was all about. There hasn't been an abundance. If you go back and even look at the PS4 and Xbox One era, there was a constant stream of releases. And you go back further to PS3, 360, and then go back even further. Like, it's almost like games have just gotten so expensive to make, and they take so goddamn long to make. Like, look at GTA 6, for Christ's sake. Like, in the PS2 era, how many GTA games was there? It was 3, it was Vice City, it was San Andreas, Vice City Stories, and GTA, well, GTA 4 was on 360.
Yeah, but Liberty City Stories as well, that came to PS. There's five games on the PS2.
Aye. And I get that, like, technology's more advanced, but it's just become too much. It's become too much big business. Like, I feel like the fun has been stripped out. Like, and I get that guys like us and many people who watch the show and watch the channel, you know, people that we speak to on X are all very similar ages. And I think we're almost buying these systems out of habit. It's like, it's because it's what we've always done. We've always bought the new consoles and bought the new games. But it's like, you sit there and you look at these machines now, and there's no identity to them. There's no originality. They're just the same PC in a bespoke box. Like, you know, Ryzen and, you know, all your CPUs and your AMD visuals and whatnot. All your, was it RDNA 2 and all that?
Yeah.
Kind of gubbins that we had at the start, remember? It's not true RDNA 2. Remember all
it's
that?
One point RDNA 1.5.
All that.
Oh, God.
So it's like there's no, like, you can, as I said it before on here many times, you can basically take a PS5 and an Xbox Series X game, two different games, screenshots, and you wouldn't be able to tell which is which. Like, unless you were, like, exclusives, like, for example, God of War or something, you go, I've missed that originality where a game looked the way it looked because of the hardware that was running it. That's what I miss. And I think that's what's missing now. There's no identity anymore. It's become very sterile. And that's why I think retro, in the way that it's taken off, you know, I think that's why it's had a rise in popularity. It's gone beyond collectors. It's gone beyond people wanting to sit games on their shelf. Is it people trying to relive their past? Maybe. But, you know, I still think there's an element of that the fun's gone out of it a wee bit, and going back, simpler, more arcade-based, smaller, shorter, you know, games from the past are more appealing than these, you know, 85 gig monster games with a disc that's got an 85 megabyte file on it to initiate a download. Mate, I got ripped on X years ago by a certain channel who goes on about preservation, because I dared to say that in the future, and not too distant future, all a disc will be is a key to activate a download. Hello.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't take pleasure in being right in it, but we all seen the way it was going, you know. So anyway, I've just ranted for about 10 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I think out of the two of us, I'd probably play a few more modern games than yourself. And there's a few games that I have enjoyed. I really liked South of Midnight because that actually felt different. That
I've
actually
seen you
felt
tweet about that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. And that didn't really do for anything really special from a gameplay perspective. I think I don't think it's fair to sort of say it hit me in a way that's similar to kind of Jet Set Radio to a degree. Not quite as inventive, not quite as striking as Jet Set Radio, but a game that had a visual and audio identity, despite gameplay that was... Jet Set Radio had a gameplay identity as well. But South of Midnight was a little bit by the numbers, but it wasn't overcomplicated. It was just a nice, breezy 10 hours going through this game, and it was enjoyable. obviously that game got lambasted for some reason. I'm playing Avowed at the moment. That's okay. It's very derivative of like Elder Scrolls and stuff like that. Indiana Jones I'm playing at the moment, and I'm sorry to anyone that likes that game or likes Xbox. I think that game is absolute shite. You know, it's a great thing to look at. It's a beautiful looking game, really realistic. Looks like you're watching a movie, and it's a great movie to watch it. Unfortunately, you have to pick up the pad and play it, and it's absolute dog shit. Hate that game, but I'm hate playing it to try and get through because the story is pretty good. So it's like the only good thing about it's like I was thinking while I was playing it, you know, I hate Uncharted. I think that's a garbage series as well. But I was thinking, Microsoft have always wanted that Naughty Dog style game that's, you know, big cinematics, great visuals. You know, they've done it. Great cinematics, great visuals, garbage gameplay, just like Uncharted. Congratulations, guys, you did it. Probably going to get a few people angrily writing in here now as well. Sorry. Sorry, I know a few people like Uncharted. Personally, I hate it, but there we go. But so I think it's from the first one. I hated the first one so much. The second one's okay. But anyway. Not all modern games are bad. There are modern games that I enjoy. As I say, South of Midnight, I'm really enjoying. The Call of Duty games I make my way through now and again, they're just kind of mindless. And that's the problem. I don't think there's anything that's really, you know, South of Midnight, you probably could have done it on the 360, to be honest. You could have done Avowed on the 360. I mean, the 360 did Skyrim. What are we doing with these games that we couldn't do 20 years ago? You know, Mario Kart World. It's basically Burnout Paradise with Mario Kart. You know, that probably could have been on the 360 as well. Does it really look like a brand new 450 quid, £80 game? Not really. You know, you could go on to CEX, you could buy a Wii U for 90 quid, a copy of Mario Kart 8 for £6 for less than 100 quid. Are you really missing out on that much? And I think that's the problem because you don't have experiences that I think are warranting the outlay. You know, and we talk about the cost of stuff, and there is, I dislike the whole thing where people are justifying the cost of stuff. Oh, it's because of tariffs, it's because of inflation. But in real world, wages haven't increased in line with the cost of living, and everyone knows that. It's a recognized thing the world over, especially here in the UK. And even if it isn't, you know, relative to your, it's like you were saying, percentage wise, relative to your pay packet, this stuff is still very expensive. It's not like back in the day when you used to get a big piece of hardware, you get a nice big manual with it. You'd actually, you know, the reason why Street Fighter 2 cost 60 quid for the Sega Mega Drive is because it needed a lot of on-chip storage, which cost a fair bit of money. That's why it costs so much. But I don't think the problem is, and I think everyone's got their own perception of value. I don't see the value in modern gaming these days. I think a lot of the modern games that I'm playing are because of Game Pass. You get your odd ones. Astro's Playroom, Astro's, what's the Astro Bot, was great on the PS5, and that was slightly cheaper, but again, simplified, charming, well thought out, made by a small team of 60 people. So those games kind of exist in pockets. But the thing that gets rammed down our throat, like the GTA 6 trailer, mate, and everyone's going mad about it, my son included. He was like, "Have you seen the GTA 6 trailer?" I was like, "Yeah, I didn't actually see any gameplay. You know, looked like a nice movie, just like Indiana Jones. Probably plays like the 360 game from 2008, like complete arse again." So it's just, yeah, I can't help but feel, and I think this is the thing, mate, and this is kind of where we are, the old men shouting at the clouds. I just don't feel like gaming is for us anymore. You know, would I have spent 80 quid on Mario Kart World when I was 25? Probably, to be honest. If I was 25 years old without commitments, with a disposable income, you know, I probably would. Now it's like 80 quid. Well, yeah, I could probably buy it. I could probably buy Mario Kart World for 80 quid, but am I getting my value out of that? Would I get more value, you know, booking a day out with the family and the kids? Is my money better placed in that direction? You know, it's when you start weighing up what value am I getting out of that versus what value am I getting out of other things, you start thinking the increase over there isn't justified. And you look at stuff like games that are just tokens. I mean, we've given it to Nintendo, Xbox, and Sony. Sega aren't getting out of this because they were some of the worst ones on Switch 2 because they've all got games that have all got that were all key cards. I'm pretty sure all the Sega games are. They're doing all sorts of nefarious bullshit, like stripping out the New Game Plus mode in the Like a Dragon games and making you have to pay for that as DLC. It's just bullshit across the board, mate. And I think that's why you get to the point where you're like, do you know what? It's probably not for me anymore. I'm going to go back to my 20, 30-year-old hardware and play on there. And even there, we're getting new games. So what are you really losing?
What you said about value, mate, I think that's the thing as well, is that whenever something new came out, like a new bit of hardware, and you kind of started seeing, like E3, for example, and you started seeing like the tech demos, like you remember the new challenge conference footage and Edge, seeing the Dreamcast running the Towers of Babel and the Edam Majiri head demo with the light sources. That was stuff that, whoa. This is a step up and a half here, you know. And then going from like Saturn and PS1 onto Dreamcast was mind blowing. The smoothness, the texture detail, the frame rates, everything, the resolution, it was such a step. And then going to the OG Xbox, that kind of ramped it up again. And then obviously you had your HD era, 360 ushered that in. Those were all really tangible leaps. See this, like I don't get impressed by graphics anymore. I think we've become almost desensitized to it now. They've got to a level where you don't go, that looks like shit. You know, it's like I think even like a one-man studio, we've seen that. Was it the game again? Oh my God, something Blade, it was on the Series X. What was that? Was that a tech demo? What was it called
I think
again?
I remember the tech
Oh.
demo. I can't remember what happened to it in the end.
Was made by one person and it was absolutely stunning, you know. So it's like the it looked great, but it's like visuals now, they're not getting to the level where they're jumping, you know. You're not seeing that. There's nothing that I look at and I go, I would need to spend 450 quid because I want to play something that looks like that. It's like I can quite happily play like an Xbox One or an Xbox 360 game and still look at it and go, oh, it's good. Like God of War on PS4, I still think looks absolutely fucking phenomenal. Like it's a gorgeous looking game. Like PS4 Pro, you can maybe get a wee bit more fidelity, a bit better frame rate, but by and large, the games now visually aren't scaling with the price. And like you said, mate, like if we were like me, if I was 20 years younger. I still remember being what 21 when PS2 launched, 22 whenever the original Xbox launched. Had no young family, no mortgage, lived with my parents, paid 180 quid a month dig money, the rest of my wages were mine, do what I want, went to GeForce and CA Games every week and literally bought the latest game. Just didn't matter what it was. What have you got new? I'll take it. Like just didn't matter. Just bought it. And now, obviously, kind of as you say, your commitments and things like that change. You do look a bit more for value, but I just, like you said, mate, I don't see the jump anymore. Like ray tracing and path tracing, and it's like, it just all feels like gimmicks. Does it make the game better? Does it play better with this stuff? It looks lovely. Does it play better? No, it's like, that's why, like, and I know we're kind of meant to be the topic of this is like why we go back to retro and we're kind of just ragging on modern gaming for like the first half hour of this, right? But it kind of sets the scene because you go, there's a comfort to going back to these older systems and these older games. Yeah, by and large, probably because there's a nostalgic hook there, an emotional hook, but it annoys me whenever, and there's people I know who say it that you need to leave those games behind. You know, they're old. They look rubbish. Why would you want to play that? And I'm like, but a good game will always be a good game. You don't just forget about. And my argument back to that is, so what, do you not watch movies from the 90s anymore? You know, do you not listen to music for the 90s anymore? Are you meant to move on from those? There's people who have a real problem in recognizing that gaming is entertainment. It's a pastime, it's an escape. A good game will always be a good game. just like a good song will always be a good song, a good movie will always be a good movie. Like, for example, a TV show, The Wire, one of the best TV shows ever made, has aged hideously because of the technology in it.
Yeah.
Using like pagers and like, you know, phone boxes and stuff like that. But the acting is just top tier. The storyline, the writing is phenomenal. And that's why it still stands up as a great show to watch. The same applies to gaming. You know, just because something, the technology it's on has aged, just because things have come after that technologically look better. You know, if you think that, you know, actors jumping about in costumes in front of green screens and creating things that aren't even there, you know, compare that to cinema from the 90s. You know, it's technology has moved on, but the old movies are still great. Same applies to games. Yeah. A great game will always be a great game. And I think that's why, you know, going back and playing these old games, there's just, they are a reminder of when the industry was about fun, not profit. And yeah, I'm not saying that Sega didn't want to make money. Obviously, Sega and Nintendo wanted to make money. That's why they are a business. They want to make money. They make these games, these consumer products to be sold. Sega were hemorrhaging money, and that's why they had to ditch hardware. But, you know, it's like their whole reason for being was still fun, creativity. There was a genuine passion for games, for fun, for new experiences, for pushing boundaries. You know, innovation, creativity, and that's what's missing, I feel now. I think, like, it's almost like gaming's become so big that it's terrified to take a risk. It costs so much money and so much time and so much effort to make a game that the focus is on from the start, oh my God, we need this to sell so many units, else it's a failure, you know. Yeah. And whereas back then there was an ability to go, I'm just going to, I've got an idea, pitch it, I go make it, here's a team, go and make it. And it's almost like, to its detriment, you know, Sony and Microsoft coming in the door was ultimately the worst thing to happen to gaming. Had a lot of fun with Xboxes and PlayStations. I still love the OG Xbox, the 360. PS2 is my favourite PlayStation ever, you know, but I think the path that those two particular companies have taken gaming down, you know, Nintendo kind of almost now operates in their own little sphere. They're like, they're, not to use the John Cena, the last true gaming company, the last true champion. But, you know, it's like they kind of operate, you know, in their own wee kind of bubble. And then the other two used to fight it out. And then one's just kind of went, well, we've spent all this money in all these studios, we can't keep them all in this box that no one's buying. Just give all our games to everybody. And don't even start me on the fallout for Gears of War, man. People losing their mind about that. That's the worst kept secret in gaming, that was going to happen. Halo's next.
Yeah.
You know, and the fallout from that will be fucking seismic.
Astronomical.
Oh, man. So there you go.
Yeah. I think the problem with a lot of it is that I don't think that console audiences are growing. I think that's pretty clear. You look at if you look at the PS3, Xbox 360, and Wii generation, the Wii sold what, 120 million? PS3 and Xbox 360 sold about 87 million each. You know, that's in total, that's 280 million. You look at the current generation, if you look at the Switch, it's 144, the PlayStation 5 is at 80, the Xbox is at about 40, you know. At a minimum, it's not grown at all. At worst, you'd say it's shrinking. That audience just isn't there. And I think that's the problem, is that they, games are that much more expensive to make, but the audience to buy them isn't there. And I think the problem with the audience not being there, and I think this is going to time, because we will get away from the doom and gloom, folks. We will start talking about the good stuff in a bit. And this is leading into that. And I think the problem is that the barrier of entry for people that aren't gamers is probably too high. So as an example, I think Elden Ring is one of the greatest games of all time. About 5 years old now, that game, isn't it? Brilliant, absolutely outstanding game. Absolutely outstanding. But, you know, it requires a lot of dedication to know how to play it, to be able to play it. You're not going to be able to get your grandma who used a Wii football back in 2007 to play it. And my wife is currently playing this game on the phone. It's like a zombie game. She's doing, you know, she's ranked up and everything on there. The gameplay is easy. You just move your character left and right on screen, shoot stuff, then you build a base and stuff, and then that turns into a big online meta game where you have to collaborate in your alliances and you fight other alliances. But all the gameplay is tap here, tap there. Is it the greatest game in the world? Now we're going to look at how we've been playing games for 30 years nonstop. No. Is it easy? Is it simple to pick up? Can anyone play it? Yes. That's the thing that Nintendo have always had. And Nintendo have always had the games that are easy to pick up and play, which is kind of probably part of the reason for the Switch's success. But that barrier of entry, I think, is getting far too high on games. You know, it's fine for us as gamers. Don't have a problem. But you look at when gaming was really kind of growing as a medium, you know, Space Invaders is still the all-time highest grossing video game of all time. That was a stick and one button. You know, some of the biggest arcade games of all time were just a stick and a button. Look at Pac-Man, didn't even have a button. You look at when gaming was really growing in the home, it was when it was simple. And then it got a little bit more complex when you had the SNES, the PS1, the Sega Saturn. But even then, you had simple games. I think part of the problem is that, especially for the masses, is that gaming isn't approachable now. And you look at some of the communication around modern gaming, some of the socials, it's not a welcoming hobby. It's not cheap. It's not accessible. You know, it's fine for people that live there. But, you know, we're an aging population. You know, Minecraft is a gateway drug, I suppose, for kids because that has a degree of complexity. It's twin stick controls. But even that is relatively simple compared to some of the other stuff out there. So I think that's the problem. And I think that's why it's kind of like you have that, you know, you see that meme with people like, you know, depression, everything hitting someone. And then there's like retro games. It's a big thing. And that's the thing that hugs the guy at the end. And I think it's retro gaming that really is the kind of the out, the savior almost, because they are still simple, approachable, accessible. Of course, the hardware, I was joking with Dean on Twitter earlier today, saying retro gaming most of the time is toggling around with old shit and wondering why it's not working. but no, once you get into the games, and there's many, many, many ways to play the games now, whether it's any of these mini devices, whether it's on emulation via PC, whether you want to get yourself a Mister, whether you get yourself like an emulation box from AliExpress or something.
Oh God,
there's untold amounts of games to enjoy these, and you get up and it's immediate fun. You don't have to sit through a tutorial, you don't have to sit for a cutscene. You know, you can pick up Sonic the Hedgehog. It's literally a D-pad, one button, you know, any of the three on the front of the controller, and away you go. Mario Brothers is two buttons, and you know, racing games, you don't, it's left and right, you don't have to worry about all the enhanced physics and everything. And I think when you start looking at what's happening in the retro scene, you know, you've got new games all the time coming out on the Sega Saturn, Sega Dreamcast, Sega Mega Drive, Sega Master System. Sega Master System has the SMS Power competition where every year there's like 20 or so games submitted just for that competition. You know, Sega Mega Drive has a release list so big that there's an actual website that documents them, has them as a release schedule with it, and with a website that's pages and pages long. So, you know, and these games don't cost an arm and a leg unless you want to get the physical version, which you do actually get a cartridge and a manual and all the stuff that you don't get with a modern game. But yeah, and I think that's kind of where we're going with this, mate, is that if you are someone that is jaded, you may not be a grumpy old bastard like us, but if you are feeling a bit jaded, I think Sega is the answer, isn't it? Or at least retro gaming.
Aye, I think the Sega scene is definitely the most vibrant and engaged. Like we've said before, the Nintendo and Sony retro gaming, I don't see a community anywhere near the size of ours and them, and I think it's because they're still relevant consoles, they're still they've got new systems and new games. They don't have to look backwards.
I don't think people like them as much as it. I'll tell you what, actually, as an aside, mate, I know we were talking about your Sega Saturn video, and when people see the video, they'll know the reason. But I was actually looking, I was on Sega Retro, and I was looking at the Sega Saturn RF unit and the Sega Saturn SCART cable have their own Sega Retro pages talking about them. You don't get any page like that for the Sony PlayStation, not at all.
There's no Radio Sony or Radio Nintendo, you know what I mean? We've got Radio Sega, you know, playing Sega music 24/7. Resident SE doesn't even need to add a jingle. It's done one thing. There you go. People might say that the barrier of entry on retro is high as well, and that's because they automatically, like the Saturn gets it. Ooh, Sega Saturn, a bit too rich for my blood. That's like. Again, it comes down to, do you want to play or do you want to collect? Now, if you just want to play, then the barrier of entry is literally as much as you want to spend on an ODE. Now, you understand that it is a rabbit hole, as we found out. You know, you end up, you buy a Hyperkin HDMI cable, which has got slight input lag and doesn't look as good. So you buy a RAD 2X, which is very, very good, no latency, but it only runs at 480p. It's a line doubler. Then you get an OSSC and you get fancy component cables, and you know, you can go crazy with it to get the best picture, but at the end of the day, you don't have to, and that's the great thing. Like, you buy a Sega Saturn with a broken disk drive, you know, on eBay, and it, I don't know, 50, 60 quid, and you spend 100 quid on a Fenrir, as you get every game. You know, they're easy to find online to back up your own copies. You know, but then you've got Saru, which is getting better and better all the time, covered on this channel in abundance. You know, big fans of it. 35 quid, flash cart, boom, job done. Don't need to open up the console anymore. There's some compatibility problems. Some games don't run, you know, perfect, but we're only in firmware 0.7. You know, TP Unix is working on it all the time. I'm pretty sure 0.8 will be around the corner. And when we get to the 1.0 release, then I'm pretty confident that we'll be sitting with a very, very strong compatibility list. But there's no reason. You're not going to spend what you would spend on a PS5 or a Series X on a Sega Saturn or a Dreamcast or a Mega Drive. In fact, I would wager you could probably buy all three systems and an ODE option for each for around about the same as a PS5 Pro quite easily.
You can get each console for less than 100 quid.
Each what?
You can get each console for less than 100 quid, depending whether you want it boxed or not, depending on condition. If you go and see each one is around about, Dreamcast is the most expensive, Saturn second most. SMS, if you want a one or a two, depends. And then the OD, and then, you know, EverDrives, you know, Master System ones, you can get pretty cheap off certain Chinese websites. Mega Drive, unlimited options. There's so many different options for there. You can go as high or low as you want. Fenrir for the Saturn, GDMU for the Dreamcast. You can probably get it for less than the Xbox Series X retails for in the UK right now, to be honest. But that's the thing. It can go, like you were saying, mate, it can go as high and low as you want, because that's the flexibility is there.
Right. I think said as well, I seen a tweet from him the other day there that he's working on a new revision of Fenrir and it's going to be cheaper.
Yeah.
So I think he's doing that because he's trying to combat the clones that have unfortunately came out on AliExpress for Fenrir. That annoyed me seeing that. I know I've got a GDMU clone. I think everybody's got a GDMU clone because Dinoon doesn't make enough of the goddamn things. Doesn't make any of them anymore and made them very, very difficult to buy, which is, like, I would wager that of all the GDMUs that are in Dreamcast across the world, I think probably 80% of them are probably clones.
It's a shame because you'd like to support him as well.
Well, if it was... See, if he had a store and you could just buy one. I'd happily put a genuine GDMU in my Dreamcast, but they're just impossible to get. As I said, I don't even know if Danone makes them anymore, but like said, you know, seeing the work that he put into Fenrir as well, and he's just a really humble guy. You know, he runs his Discord server. He tries to help everybody out with support. He's like a one-man team. And it took a while. I mean, it took 5 years. You know, I've had my Fenrir for 5 years, 5 years last month. To see it getting cloned is really sad. Well, how much cheaper do you want it? But obviously Sed's kind of put a fire under him to make the official one even cheaper if he can. So keep an eye on that if you're interested in Fenrir. But as you say, mate, you can go as high or low as you want. And the fact that there's always new games coming out, like the Mega Drive scene in Brazil, things those guys are doing, it's just insane. Like brand new games like Final Fight MD, you know, the Fatal Fury Mega Real Drive about, game, yeah. You know, stuff like that. Then you've got also the Dreamcast just now is having a renaissance because of Callisto OS. You know, Falco putting, was it 2 years of his life into, you know, optimizing and tweaking Callisto OS. And now we're seeing things like Grand Theft Auto 3, Vice City, with Wipeout. Obviously, people going, Wipeout, of course, a Dreamcast would run it. It's from a next generation machine, but it's like, have you seen how it runs it?
Yeah.
It's phenomenal. And we've also just had a very early sneak peek of Driver 2 on Dreamcast.
I missed that one. Yep. I haven't seen that. What I was going to say is Metal Gear, literally at the time of recording, has just released on the Sega Mega Drive.
Really?
Yeah, Hoffman's latest piece.
Wow.
And it's great because, as we did with Frontier Force, mate, where you're able to support these developers, you can. You know, it's great to pay a fiver for Frontier Force. Phenomenal game on the Sega Master System. Absolutely gorgeous looking game. And it's not going to cost you 80 quid. It's going to cost you a nice little fiver. You support the developer directly because obviously you'd like to think that you're supporting developers, you know, when you buy a game, I buy Sega games because I want to support Sega. And I get that. But I think the reality is that it's not going to developers. They get their salary. The money's going to Microsoft, Sony, Sega, the publishers, unfortunately. But that one, we could work, you know that you're paying the guy directly for itch.io. So I think that's a nice thing as well. You know, when you're talking about, you know, Sed and the work that he puts in for the units, you really get a chance to give back directly to the people that are doing this stuff. And I think that's a really nice feeling that you're able to do that.
Even like supporting, you know, guys like Mauro Xavier on his Patreon, stuff like that. We support Frog Bull on his Patreon as well, you know, for the work that they do. And I think it's these guys, they're not doing it for money. You know, yeah. At the end of the day, it's like J.N. Martin on the Simulant Discord has said many a time that he does these projects for him. And we're just lucky that he decides to let us see them. You know, he doesn't say that, that's just my opinion, but it's like, he does say that he does these to show to himself that A, it can be done, and B, that he can do it. And he decides to release them publicly and obviously enable us to create builds from his code to run on real hardware via, obviously, ODEs. But it's crazy to see what's going on, mate. It's every Sega console, you know. Well, nobody's doing anything on SG-1000 or Game Gear that I can think of, but the kind of the four main ones that everyone kind of resonates with, Master System, Mega Drive, Saturn, and Dreamcast, are all like thriving right now. So you're not only going back and enjoying what Sega and developers of the time gave us in the 90s, but you're also getting people who lived back then, loved these systems back then, have grown up probably thinking one day I'm going to make a game for this, have then created development tools to enable them to do that, and are then given back to the community that inspired them in the first place. It's like a perfect kind of retro gaming food chain, mate, isn't it? Really? Yeah, it's phenomenal.
It really is, mate. And I think it's great to see all of the Sega mainstream Sega consoles get a lot of support because, as you say, yeah, there's loads on the Master System. They've got their existing libraries. You've got 300 odd games on the Master System. You've got 1,000 on the Saturn, 600 or so on the Dreamcast. few thousand on the Mega Drive. It's good to see that you can put you there's always new games coming for these systems. You know, we try to cover as many translations and mods and new games as we can, but we can't cover them all because there's just so many. And then by the same token, you're still seeing stuff that people trying their hands at the 32X and the Mega CD. You got the Doom Resurrection project. Is it Doom Fusion now? Because I was actually looking the other day because you have to burn a CD. And I was thinking, if I'm going to deal with this, I might want to get a proper CD. And you can buy one that comes in the box with the cartridge and the CD in it. And it did look nice. It was a little bit pricey, and I didn't know if it went straight back to the guys that were behind it. So I was a bit wary about it. But it's amazing that people are doing this. You know, you had Golden Axe on the 32X. You had Sonic Robo Blast on the 32X. You've got games coming out everywhere. I'm sure there are Game Gear ones. Not sure about SG-1000 because obviously the popularity of that console, especially outside of Japan, wasn't as big as the others. But you know, the as you say, mate, it's absolutely thriving. And even if you aren't, if you even outside of Sega, there's plenty of stuff going on in the retro scene, and it does make you think, you know, if you play, I'm playing stuff like Princess Crown. Princess Crown is a game that's easily as long as, say, easily as long as it's longer than South of Midnight was. It's longer than, say, Avowed. Probably about as long as Indiana Jones. Which one's given you more joy? Which one, at the end of the day? And yeah, as I say, mate, you get your stuff that you do in the modern day that is pretty decent. But it's not, like you say, it's not mind-blowing anymore. We saw the side to side for Days Gone recently for that's getting a remaster from it's a PS4 game getting a remaster on the PS5, and you look at the pictures side by side and you're like, which one's which?
Exactly. Aye.
So
And you're pinching and you're zooming in your phone, you're like, and mate, and then people go, oh, you have to excuse the compression on the pictures on X. They're like, fuck off. It's like there's like you need to, that's what I'm talking about. The jump isn't there anymore. Like,
diminishing returns, that's the problem.
aye, that's exactly it, mate. It's like, how can they justify calling that a remaster? It looks the exact same.
Yeah, I know. And sometimes I think, like, you know, all the ray tracing and stuff, sometimes you look at games with pre-baked lighting, you know, and the games with the pre-baked lighting are more artistic, in my opinion, look better than the ones. So it very much is a case where the current gen is kind of underwhelming. I did feel this way in the Xbox One reveal as well, mate. I went to PC and got really into PC then until Halo 5, and Game Pass kind of roped me back into console gaming. But I think I was feeling a little bit disillusioned with modern gaming then. And that's when I got really back into retro, was in like 2013 when the Xbox One and PS4 came out. Obviously, dabbled back into mainstream modern console gaming back then. But you know, the Sega Saturn has not been unplugged since. You know, it's always been ever present. And I've gone through console updates and the modern systems, but the Sega Saturn's still there, and it's more than just nostalgia, mate. And I think just to take a line out of, you know, our friends at Gaming for Ages, they play retro games for their quality. It's not just about nostalgia. These games are good. They stay good. They were good. They are classics. They remain good. And someone put up a really cool meme the other day. It's like had people, like someone looking at a painting, this is art. Someone looking at a movie, this is art. Someone listening to a music, this is art. It's like video game that has pictures, has pictures, has movies, has music, and also you can, and it's in also interactive. This is not art. It's like, it doesn't make sense.
Aye, I think gaming, and especially retro gaming, is very much not given the respect I think that it deserves. You know, it's looked upon, as I said before, people think that why are you playing that? It runs like that, it looks like that, it's old, it's had its time, move on, get with the times. And I'm like, nah. An old game, you play it, you know, because it's good. Like, You know, Sega Rally, my old favourite. It never gets old. Like, and I've said it before, sometimes whenever you pause Sega Rally, it's only then that you notice how blocky it actually is, how pixelated it is. But see, whenever it's moving, man, it's fucking poetry.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's stunning, and it's the gameplay that holds up. It's like, and it's not, people go, oh, this is some cope. Could just hear it. It's like, this is some cope, some grade A cope going on. It's like, that's no cope. It's like, it's a great game. It plays amazing. Like Sonic 2, you play that every year. You complete that every year. It plays amazing.
Yeah.
You know, it's it doesn't stop playing well just because another year has passed on a calendar. You know, that's not the metric of what makes a good game. Is there's no expiry date on a video game. You know, there's no sell-by date. You know, you play it because it's good. A good game will always be timeless. And that's why people are coming back to retro, because they're timeless, they're great experiences, they're more fun experiences, and you don't need to worry about flashy visuals or high barrier of entry to get in. You just pick up the goddamn controller and have fun.
Yeah, you're not going to have to overpay on a new Sega console because they're not making them anymore. So.
Exactly, mate. Exactly, mate. And if you know where to look on certain Japanese auction sites, you can pick up a Saturn absolutely dirt cheap. You'll probably pay more getting it here than you will actually paying for the system.
Yeah.
You know, so enough. I got one for what, 20, a Japanese one was 28 quid, because Tom Thumb put it in his massive package from Japan with his haul, you know, so the shipping was kind of absorbed in that regard. But you know, there's means to get these consoles without paying through the nose for them. If you do go down the CEX route, you get a 5-year warranty with it anyway. You ain't getting a 5-year warranty with an Xbox Series X or a PS5, you know. So, well, if you buy it for CEX, you will. But you know, there's just so many ways to get any retro, as you said, mate. Mister's getting more popular. You can emulate, even you know, 16-bit stuff is very easy to emulate on Mac and PC. 8-bit stuff as well, Game Gear stuff, you can easily emulate that as well. You know, we're seeing, it was SSF, the Saturn emulator, I've seen,
yeah,
got an update. You think Yaba Sanshiro is getting better, the Mr. Cores are getting better for Saturn. You've already got, you know, Dreamcast emulators that are going, have been going for a long time. Was it Redream is one of them?
Yeah.
You know, so you've got plenty of options for emulation. OG Xbox can be emulated, so you don't have to buy the actual hardware if you don't want to. We just play it on the hardware because we had them back in the day. And for me, I can't play Saturn, PS2, Dreamcast, and Xbox emulated. There's just the games and the experiences and the memories are tied to being able to look at the actual console under my TV. Like, there's just something special about playing the games on the systems that they were running on at the time. You know, emulation, I think, is a phenomenal tool that's only going to get better. You know, I think as decades pass and hardware isn't as well maintained going forward, and if these systems start to corrode or fail, then maybe one day, many, 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 many years down the line, emulation will be the only way to play a Sega Saturn. But for now, there's still plenty of systems out there that need a good home. It's like Saturn Trust. We never put a good Saturn down.
No. Oh, don't. I keep looking at my Sega list on eBay, and so often I see a Mega Drive on there, I think. And it says untested. I'm like, oh, I want to rescue it. I want to rescue that Mega Drive. Like, I've got a 2 down there. I've got a 1 there. I've got my childhood one down there. I've got a Japanese one up there. I've got 2 more in the loft. I'm like, I don't need another Mega Drive.
A Mega Drive farm going on, mate.
But
like a rescue center.
I know. It really is turning into the Mega Drive Trust, mate. But I was going to pick up on what you were saying about these games that, you know, it's there. I think with this hardware, for me personally, it's the limitations that give them personality, you know? And I think that's why the games are as good as they are. Because let's face it, today you've got limited potential. I think any game that you wanted to make, you could probably make it on modern hardware. There's no, you're not limited to your imagination. But I feel like that has constrained imagination to a degree. You know, when you're completely free and you don't have to, and there are no limits, it's kind of like when you've got, I get like it on Spotify, mate. You know, when I used to have a CD collection, I knew every single CD I had, I knew every single song, and I'd be like, oh, I want to listen to this. Spotify, I pick it up and I'm like on choice paralysis. You know, what do I want to
Aye.
listen to? I can't remember half the artists I used to listen to. And I think it's almost the same with like when you get into the imagination of what you want to create. Whereas those systems, they had to work within the confines and the limitations of those systems. And that's what I find quite romantic about it. And that may be just me just being an old nostalgic twat, but I do think that there is something in there because Sega Rally is Sega Rally on Sega Saturn by design. You know, it may run at half the frame rate of the arcade. It may be on a much lower resolution, but because of that, they wanted to make it as good as it could be. They wanted to really hone in on giving people the best versions of play possible. And yeah, some of that was fueled by the fact that they needed a game to go out there and compete with Ridge Racer in the West and give the Sega Saturn a shot in the arm and Sega America breathing down their throat. 98% finished. We'll have that, don't worry. But yeah, it's the same. It's like there's someone that's been going around commenting on various posts that I've noticed quite a ignorant, attention-seeking, or so and so. I'm not going to give them the benefit of naming their names, but they've been going around saying, "Oh, you like this version of Sega Rally? You're insane. Well, why would you like the Saturn version over the arcade? Why would you like this version?" And people can have preferences, but I really think that a lot of that is driven by the fact that these games are restrained, constrained, and people work within their limitations. You know, Dragon Force came out on the Dragon Saturn because of its unique hardware. Would Dragon Force have appeared on any other console? Well, it hasn't. So,
Exactly.
like stuff like Guardian Heroes, it works on other consoles as well. You know, Mario 64 was, as much as I'm not a Mario 64 fan, Mario 64 was designed specifically for the N64 hardware, and that's part of that game's charm, I'd imagine. I'm not a fan, as I say, but that sort of thing applies. Lilith Wars. That was a game made specifically for the N64, and that game is fucking fantastic. Love that game to bits. So it applies to other consoles as well. Best Sega, Light Wars, Star Wars, Star Fox, they're the best Nintendo Sega tributes to ever come out of a company not called Sega. I stand by that. But yeah, it's those sort of games, and you know, Star Wing as well with the Super FX chip, Virtua Racing with the virtual processor. You know, even the 32X, you look at the port of Virtua Racing, the port of, even as underwhelming as it was, Doom on the 32X was constrained by the hardware by the time. And it's, even though it's not a great port, there's a romance to go into that version. But if you go to the Doom Resurrection version, where all these geniuses and enthusiasts have taken it and made it as good as it can be on that hardware once again, there's a romance to that. There's something about the ingenuity and the passion and the drive and the creativity to really bring the best out. It's like, you know, you've got an unlimited canvas, make the best paint ever. Or, all right, well, your canvas is the size of an A5 sheet of paper. What can you do on that? And you know, you're probably going to get more out of that small sheet of paper than you are about the out of the canvas that's the size of a football pitch. That's just my thought
It's a beautiful analogy, mate.
on
I liked that.
it.
It was very good. I the comment that I laughed about this individual as well was that Sega molested their arcade games on Saturn. I was like, now you can dislike a game, you can dislike a system. It's absolutely your prerogative to do that. But there's a fine line between opinion and bullshit. And this was just nonsense. It's like molested. Now, don't get me wrong, we know there's some arcade ports that Sega did that weren't the best on Saturn. You know, House of the Dead, even though it captures the gameplay of the arcade, the texture work on it makes it one very ugly game. Sega Touring Car tried to be too ambitious in terms of running it, you know, the speed that it runs at. choppy kind of frame rate. Play the NTSC version though, and it does mitigate it a wee bit. It's a better game to play. But by and large, Sega's Model 2 ports on Saturn were fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, Virtua Fighter 2 runs higher resolution than the Model 2 arcade version. 60 FPS, using Gouraud shading to make up for the lack of, you know, texture work. Because I was at Model 2 can stretch textures across multiple polygons, whereas VDP 1 can only stretch a texture across a single polygon or sprite at once. So using Gouraud shading to kind of replicate the lightning, the way that it bounces off the characters, is what makes the fighters in Virtua Fighter 2 on Saturn look so damn good. You know, stuff like that. Again, just using the hardware to the absolute best, just these little kind of nips and tucks and tweaks and tricks that they don't need to make them, they don't need to be as inventive anymore. You know, it's there's nothing like that. Virtua Cop 1, Virtua Cop 2, Manx TT, yes, only got two tracks, but or two courses, or two variations of the one course, and you can drive them in reverse. But still, Titleist did a great job on that port. You know, so molested their arcade games. Please, man, talk shite. These ports are as great as they are because they have the character of the system they were designed to run on built into them. It's part of their DNA. It's why I'll always play Saturn Virtua Fighter 2. It's the only... I've got access to an arcade perfect version, but I don't play it. I play the Saturn version because it feels right. It feels like, for me, the best version of the game that I can play. It plays great. It looks great. It's got the soul of the Saturn etched all the way through it. It's phenomenal. Likewise, Sega Rally. So, and you can say the same for Dreamcast for the likes of Shenmue and Jet Set Radio, Metropolis Street Racer, Soul Calibur. You know, games that weren't all made by Sega, but they've all got that Dreamcast DNA woven through them. Like, Soul Calibur wouldn't be the way it is on any other system apart from Dreamcast. You know, MSR would go on to become Project Gotham Racing, but Project Gotham Racing 1 on Xbox did carry over a lot of the UI and even the fonts from Metropolis Street Racer, but the series very quickly deviated from it. MSR just has the absolute soul of the Dreamcast through it as well. So these systems and these games were made hand in hand, and that uniqueness, that identity fused together is what makes them so great.
Yeah, it really is, mate. I think it's one of these things where I think the personality of the system is absolutely the best way to describe it. I think, and that's what it is. These systems all had personalities. You can say what you want about the way that Sega managed them, the way that Sega managed their franchises, the fact that Sega didn't carry franchises through generation to generation. But then that gives each generation its own personality, you know. And unfortunately, it feels like personality is just what's lacking from this generation. And one of the most disappointing things about the Switch 2, aside from the price, which we've done to death, and I know it's probably some people raging at us in the comments.
Oh, those people raging, mate, every time we bring up Switch 2's price.
Yeah,
it's but like I think that raging the comments.
Well, I think the thing that disappoints about the Switch 2 is that it is so iterative. It's so iterative. It's just, here's the Switch, but a little bit more powerful. It talks about being able to use the Joy-Con as a mouse, but kind of, is that it? Is that it? You know, you had the NES, and the Super Nintendo was all Mode 7. It didn't just go more powerful, because the Mega Drive, in terms of horsepower, had the faster processor, even though the SNES was 2 years old, 2 years younger. But the SNES was like Mode 7, all these colors. It didn't just make it more powerful. It went in different directions. 3D gaming, 3D arenas. N64 was completely different again. GameCube, okay, was a little bit more iterative, but we were still very creative from the control side. Then you had the Wii, which was radically different again. Then you had the Wii U, which was radically different again. This had a touchscreen. Then you had the Switch, which was an evolution of the Wii U. Now you got the Switch 2, which is just the same again. Even the Nintendo DS, the 3DS, was like, it's more powerful, but it's also trying glasses off 3D. And I think that's the problem, is Xbox and PlayStation. And, you know, you don't know you're playing on the Xbox or a PlayStation you know, you could give someone an Xbox controller or a PlayStation controller and go, oh yeah, what console are you playing? And you know, they could be playing on a PC. No one would know the difference. And I think sadly that's where Nintendo seems to be going, because they're getting a lot more of the mainstream games, a lot more of the third-party games, it seems, for the Switch 2, and they'll be PS4 level graphics, and then they'll kind of become part of that. I don't know. I don't want to say a soup, but it's sort of everything starts kind of feeling the same. You know, it's not like when you had the Mega Drive and Super Nintendo, or the Saturn, N64, and PlayStation, where they all had their own different designs and visual makeup and aesthetics. You don't have that anymore, so everything else becomes grey. So that's why, you know, retro gaming becomes a very personality-based thing. And you know, it's not for everyone. Some people are going to be fine with the current games. As I say, it doesn't feel like it's marketed for me. The thing is, I've not bought a £60 game, a £75 game. Most certainly won't be buying an £80 game, because I just don't see the value in it. My son spent £100 on Dragon Ball Sparking Zero to get the game 3 days early. He's the target audience. We're not. What appeals to us? The old consoles. They've got the personality. Maybe that personality is not for you. Maybe it is, but hey, people should definitely give it a try.
It's like Jules in Pulp Fiction, isn't it? Talk to Vincent. It's like Jules goes and talk about like pigs and dogs.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, dog got personality. Personality goes a long way.
That's it,
Like,
mate.
that's it. Personality goes a long way. That's it. It's, I mean, see if you watch the Xbox On documentary that he did, was it five or six parts? And the first three are all about the OG Xbox. I watch that, mate, and it actually makes me sad to see, because it takes you back to like what Xbox was, you know. And even Seamus Blackley, I think, to an extent, has been on social media, and he's even kind of not so much slated the direction that Xbox is taking, but I think he kind of obviously, I think he questions what they've kind of done with his baby, so to speak. You know, it's like it's been adopted by somebody and they've kind of raised it not in the way he would have, kind of thing. It's like, aye, it's to see that it was it he said? It was something about he was talking to someone, and it was about the vision for Xbox at the start was to make sure people knew that they weren't just buying a PC, a shrunken down PC in a box. That was the hardest message to get across about Xbox, and it wasn't just a shrunk down PC in a box. And they managed to do that. They managed to get it taken credibly as a console. What has Xbox become? A shrunken down PC in a box.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, either, you know, is it die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain?
It's
You
exactly it.
know, it's, I love watching that documentary. Just, I've watched it umpteen times, because it's brilliant to see the passion from like Robbie Bach and Jay Allard, even Peter Moore's on there at a point as well, talking about the 360. And, you know, to see what it's become is sad, because, you know, during the 360 era, they had such an amazing piece of hardware, despite the Red Ring of Death, man, with people still flock to it. It's so many brilliant exclusives. And that's the thing. People going about, oh, the exclusives are bad for business and stuff like that. Exclusives were still the identity of consoles, were part of that identity. You need to have something unique on your system to make it worth buying. Like right now, they're talking about the next Xbox could potentially be, or even the next PlayStation could be like a £1,000 console. Like, so basically, they have just become PCs. You know, they'll just become like graphics cards. New one comes out, price is astronomical. Aye, it's just they've kind of forgotten what it's about. It's become too business orientated, it's become too big business. There's no risks, there's no fun, there's limited creativity. And we're certainly in this era, as you say, mate, where no one's actually paying money for games. You know, I think obviously Steam is thriving. People are buying a lot of games on Steam. I seen there was a chart came out that Indiana Jones sold more on PS5 than it did on Steam. Certainly more than it sold on Xbox, but being on Game Pass. Seen people predicting that Microsoft would shut Game Pass down because it's not generating the sales. They thought people would kind of try games and then buy them, and they're not doing it. I don't know, but I think the money they're raking in from subscriptions, I don't see them shutting that down anytime soon. You know, it's still making them some income. So, as you say, mate, I just don't feel that like we are the target audience anymore. I feel like, you know, going backwards for us is like going forward. You know, we've went back and now we're going forward with these systems into a new era. You know, it's like Marty and Doc going back to the alternate 1985. You know, yeah. It's like you're going forward into a new future with these systems where homebrew is king. You know, mods are all the rage. There's always enhancements and improvements and innovation. And I find that way more exciting. You know, seeing Falco go on about his gains with a Z, you know, that he gets in Callisto OS and finding tweaks in the GTA codes and getting more cycles out the SH4 and improving performance. That shit gets me going. I like reading that. So that excites me way more than any new release could. I'm afraid that a console constantly hooked up to the internet that requires mandatory installs of 85 gigabyte downloads. If you do pay for it on a disc, you're getting a tiny, tiny file that's smaller than Crazy Taxi was on a GD-ROM. Crazy Taxi is 115 megabytes on a 1.1 gig GD-ROM disc. Microsoft want you to buy a Blu-ray with 85 megabytes of information to initiate a download. Madness, mate. Madness.
I know. And they call us mad. Well, you know, if it's insane to love your retro games, insane to love your retro Sega, then guilty as charged, mate.
Guilty as charged, mate.
Yeah.
That's that. It's part of why we do this. It's a passion. It's not reliving your youth. It's not 100% nostalgia. It's that these systems and games still deserve to be given airtime. They deserve to be remembered, deserve to be played. And, you know, the community is growing all the time. And innovation, as I said, is just constantly on the rise. It's exciting. It's, I said before in a previous show that we came to this, you know, 5 years ago. You compare 5 years ago in the retro community to now. We started this at just the right time, mate. We are riding a wave right now. Yeah. And it's just going to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. And hopefully all you guys, viewers and listeners will be there with us. Hopefully those of you that do enjoy your modern gaming, you continue to do so. And hopefully it's...
Absolutely.
Don't want anyone to get too upset with what we're saying. It's just us saying that we're not for us. And I think maybe there's a few of you that feel the same way. Get in touch, you know. Let's have a nice conversation about a nice civilized chat. Because just generally, we've got a great bunch of viewers and community behind that. We can have a nice discussion around this. But yeah, if you are feeling a little bit beleaguered, a little bit disenfranchised with gaming at the moment, then, you know, come on over to the Sega side, the retro scene, which just happens to be thriving. If you've enjoyed what you're seeing here, you know, give us a like and a subscribe. And if you want to be extra mega, you can become a member and support the channel from as little as 99 pence a month. We've got several tiers. The top tier are Akira All Access members, getting perks such as getting their names read out as a big thank you right now.
Certainly, you and I and I. We're Akira All Access members for today's show. We have G-Man, Steph Peaks, Mike Kowski, Craig Williamson, Sega Saturn Shiro, Resident SD, P-Wall, Peter 007, Andy Mackey, Nick Tullock, Greg Matthews, Tom Fum, Kaiju Leviathan, Nelson Serino, and David Owens. So thank you very much to all our members and subscribers. As always, thank you for your continued support, liking, sharing the content, you know, just getting involved in the Discord, getting involved in the comments. It all helps just raise awareness of the channel as we continue this fantastic journey that we've been on. So thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. So that's all for this episode. Hope you've enjoyed. Do get in touch via our Discord, the Radio Sega Discord, Sega Saturn Shiro Discord, and the comments below. But until next time, we will see you on the Sega side.
Sega!